Hi, my name is Stuart Weems and welcome to the Investopoly podcast. My goal is to share easy to understand evidence-based holistic insights to help you master the game of building wealth. And in this episode, I'd like to talk about crypto or Bitcoin, whatever you want to call it. Let's just call it cryptocurrency as an overall sort of catch-all term. Now, the price of Bitcoin has risen 64% in 2024 so far. So that's only after a few months, of course. And that's after rising 156% in 2023. And last week, a client brought to my attention that the CEO of the largest asset manager in the world, which is called BlackRock, suggested that crypto was a good long-term store of value. He kind of likened it to digital gold. And that might seem like great news for crypto investors, but I disagree. And interestingly enough, the Vanguard CEO said, we're not going to bring out a crypto ETF. We don't think it should be included in portfolios. So a few years ago, I published my reservations around crypto, and I've got a link on the blog on the website. But that was a few years ago, and a lot's happened since then. So I thought I would record a bit of an update to sort of share my views to date, particularly in light of those most recent extraordinary returns. So in October last year, the SEC, which is the US Securities and Exchange Commission, granted approval for the first spot Bitcoin ETF, exchange traded fund. So previously they didn't want to approve any ETFs that were just spot Bitcoin ETFs, and they eventually came to the party and said, okay, we'll allow them in the market, which is pretty extraordinary because it does really open up the ability to invest in Bitcoin to a very wide audience. Of course, anyone with a share trading account can now do that very cost effectively and incrementally as well. You can just put like a little bit in or a lot, or add to it over time and so forth. And really since then, really since the start of the year, there's been 10 listed Bitcoin ETFs, and BlackRock probably has the highest profile one under its brand name iShares, and in fact has only in 2 months attracted $20 billion of money into this ETF. The ticker code is IBIT. It's listed on the NASDAQ in the US, so it's not an Aussie stock. It's a US listed ETF. And at the moment, there aren't any spot crypto ETFs listed on the ASX, but I say yet because I wouldn't be surprised if eventually the asset managers and ETF managers will corral the ASX into approving some. Now, asset managers like BlackRock, they've got a vested interest in attracting investment dollars into their products because their revenue is based on a percentage of the assets that are invested in those ETFs. And so, of course, there's a commercial interest for an asset manager like BlackRock to come out and say, look, we think Bitcoin's the best thing in the world. We think it's a store of value. We think everyone should get on board. That is their business after all. Conversely, Vanguard is not a for-profit business. So BlackRock has shareholders it needs to please. Vanguard does not. It's a not-for-profit business. And interestingly enough, they're both, which are number one and two. BlackRock is the largest asset manager. Vanguard is the second largest asset manager in the world. And they've both arrived at completely different conclusions on Bitcoin. Interestingly enough, their structures are completely different, as I said, a for-profit and a not-for-profit business. Now, it's interesting, you know, what impacts will people be able to use ETFs, invest in Bitcoin? What impact will it have on the price of Bitcoin? And you know, there's lots of different views out there. Some are saying, look, there'll be more volatility because, you know, people can more easily buy and sell it. Other people will say, well, it'll become more popular because it's easier to buy and sell. I guess time will tell. Certainly year to date, we've seen, as I said, over a 60% increase in the price of Bitcoin. So it's been positive to date, but it'll really be interesting to see what the future holds. Now, why don't I really like Bitcoin? Well, it's been around for more than a decade. You know, it's had considerable attention for more than a decade. And, you know, some advocates of crypto have said, look, one day it could replace traditional currencies and have a what they call decentralized finance and potentially use it as a medium of exchange. But really, ultimately, it hasn't happened. You know, it's rarely used as a medium of exchange. I'm going to talk about, you know, whether it can be used as a store of value in a second. And probably the only exception here is El Salvador. that's opted to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender. Now, that's an emerging market. It's not going to probably happen in a developed market. Now, the underlying technology, so the blockchain technology behind Bitcoin and most cryptocurrencies, you know, I acknowledge that has a lot of utility and function. But at the moment, certainly crypto doesn't have any function. And if it hasn't adopted that yet, then is a big question whether it will in the future as well. And look, when assessing traditional share investments, for example, you know, we need to think about, you know, what product or service does the business offer? Is there a demand for that product or service? Can we offer that product and service at a sustainable level? Are they profitable? Will they pay a dividend? All these sort of fundamental analysis. And so when you apply the same approach to crypto, unfortunately, there's no functional purpose for crypto other than a means to speculate. You know, it attracts investors and speculators and traders, and that's fine. And I would argue that's probably the lion's share of people buying and selling Bitcoin are really for speculative purposes. And the best explanation for crypto that I've read recently is they called it a social Ponzi scheme. And so what that really means is that the success of Bitcoin hinges on existing investors to convince prospective investors that it's a good thing to get into. Because if I can convince everyone else to buy it, then obviously it's going to stimulate the market and I create that demand. And almost sort of, you know, some people call it the greater fool theory, which means I can go and buy this asset with the expectation that someone will come along and pay even more for that asset. And that's kind of the greater fool theory, if you like. But of course, everything is popular until one day it's not. Popularity is not a fundamental investment attribute that you're looking for. Popularity isn't perpetual. And that's my concern. So these speculators could dry up as quick as they came into the market. Now, some people argue that crypto serves as a store of value, so similar to gold, like the CEO of BlackRock was saying. And there's two problems with that. The first one is that there's significant counterparty risk with cryptocurrencies because most crypto is held on exchanges or under custody arrangements. And there's no regulation or independent oversight over these exchanges or these custody arrangements. And we only have to think back to the high-profile case of FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried, who's been convicted of 7 counts of fraud and conspiracy. And it's estimated that investors in FTX lost about $8 billion. As expected, of course, some exchanges have taken really strong steps to demonstrate to investors that they've put in place certain controls and oversights to safeguard, you know, monies and cryptocurrency in particular, and wealth, I should say. But really, the asset class, you know, if you look at all cryptocurrency, it's worth more than $1 trillion. An investment asset class that's worth more than $1 trillion should not be left to self-regulate. Problems live in the dark. If we think about the banking sector, which is heavily regulated, even problems and fraud and people stealing money and so forth, that happens in the banking industry, notwithstanding it's heavily regulated. And so there's a heap of counterparty risk there that I think doesn't really suggest it's a store of value. Now, as I understand it, if your crypto is held on the blockchain, not through an exchange, this eliminates the counterparty risk. However, that, as I understand, a complex thing to do, and most investors in Bitcoin are doing it through exchanges. The second issue as a store of value is its volatility. So Bitcoin's volatility has really fluctuated between 20 and 100%, which is extraordinarily high. The volatility of gold's around 15%, and that's a store of value. Now, that one potential solution is to use what's called a stable coin, which is a type of cryptocurrency that sort of pegs their price to other assets like the US dollar. However, they still have a reasonable amount of counterparty and liquidity risk that you need to be really careful with. So I'm not suggesting that stable coins are a perfect exchange for gold. And really, ultimately, a general form of cryptocurrency certainly has a substantially high amount of volatility, especially compared to what other people would regard as a safe asset like gold. And so really, you put those two things together, huge counterparty risk, a lot of volatility. It's never going to be a store of value until those two things are rectified. Now, despite those two things, the other concern that I have with it is if it became really successful, it will be its ultimate undoing. By that I mean, you know, a country's ability to regulate its own currency is absolutely crucial. Like, a country needs to be able to regulate its currency. It controls inflation, fosters economic growth, growth, investment, enhances international trade. It safeguards consumers and businesses from fraudulent activities such as counterfeiting or money laundering, you know, all these sorts of things. That's why it's important for a country to regulate its own currency. Therefore, if crypto did gain broader acceptance, if it started to be used as a medium of exchange just like money, it's very simple that almost certainly developed economies would turn around and start regulating it. And all of a sudden then, that's the whole point of having this decentralized currency or decentralized finance will then become centralized because it will be regulated just like any other currency. So even if cryptocurrency was to ultimately be successful one day, it's going to lose one of the main attributes, which is having this decentralized nature. This is one of the main attributes that people talk about or benefits that cryptocurrency provides. So it just really ultimately can't win. Well, the only way it wins if it continues to be popular into perpetuity, but popularity is never everlasting. So it's for these reasons that we don't go anywhere near cryptocurrency. We don't think it's a good long-term investment. You know, people want to have a play around, that's fine, but it's not really, it shouldn't be part of an underlying core investment strategy. However, it's very difficult to read the papers or the internet and not see a story of how someone's made billions of dollars investing in crypto. You know, but it is really important to realize that all markets operate on a zero-sum game basis, which means that for every winner, there's a loser. So for every headline where someone's made billions of dollars, you just have to assume that there's always other people on the other side of the transaction, and it's likely they've lost billions of dollars as well. And that's important to remember because, of course, the losers never get publicized, only the winners do. Now, if you do want to dabble in crypto, there's two bits of advice I would have. Firstly, only invest money that you're willing to lose. So make sure that your personal strategy is protected from the performance of your cryptocurrency investments. You know, if they blow up one day, it's not a big deal. But if you want to put a little bit of money, otherwise you wouldn't miss, you know, throw it in there. Secondly, when you have a look at annualized returns in cryptocurrency, because they are highly volatile, so you get one year where there's double-digit losses and another year where there's double-digit gains, maybe you're better off to trade crypto rather than just own it, which again is not my traditional approach to investing, but neither is cryptocurrency. I just think one day the music will stop and the party will be over, and so long as you aren't overexposed to that particular asset class, if we want to call it an asset class, you should be okay. Okay, thanks very much for listening. As always, if you enjoy this episode and this podcast, please do share it with anyone that you think might get any value from it. And until next week, bye for now.